A1 Insights Podcast. Stay up to date with the latest trends in education and training from the leaders in perinatal nursing education. Here's your host, Sophia Navard.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to A1 Insights. I'm your host, Sophia Navard, and on today's show, we'll be discussing lower extremity nerve injury during childbirth. In early 2020, A1 released the Analgesia and Anesthesia in the Intrapartum Period Evidence-Based Clinical Practice Guideline. Soon after, we were contacted by Nurse Jennifer Webb, who shared her story of lower extremity nerve injury with our science team in an effort to bring awareness to this issue and emphasize the importance of proper positioning during the intrapartum period. This collaboration led to the development of A1's 11th practice brief, highlighting lower extremity nerve injury in childbirth. We are joined today by Dr. Cheryl Parker, A1 science team member and assistant director of the program of nurse anesthesia at Murray State University, and Jennifer Webb, critical care nurse at Texas Health. Welcome, Cheryl and Jennifer.
Thank you. Thank you, Sophia. It's nice to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. All right, we'll start with Cheryl. Tell us a bit about yourself and your clinical nursing background.
Yes, I have been a nurse for about 26 years at this point. I started out as a postpartum nurse. I've worked about 8 years in labor and delivery in a very busy labor and delivery unit in Kentucky, and then moved into anesthesia, where I've been doing exclusively obstetric anesthesia practice for about 13 years. And then, of course, just recently transitioned into the educational world and took a position as assistant director of clinical practice in a nurse anesthesia program located here in Kentucky. I also been married about 36 years and have two wonderful children and a beautiful grandbaby named Henry.
Wonderful. And congrats on the 36 years.
Thank you.
All right. And Jennifer, tell us about yourself and your clinical nursing background.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So I've been a nurse for right at 10 years, and my first 5 years I worked in trauma ICU, so got a lot of critical care experience there, and then the last five I've been working at a heart and vascular hospital where we do a lot of cardiac procedures, and so obviously my background is a little different than what we're talking about today as far as clinical background, so obviously when we get into it, I'll get to share why I have a connection and a personal connection to all this. But I've been sort of in this educational world of what we're talking about with lower extremity nerve damage for the last year and a half. I'm pretty entrenched in that. And then I've been married for 12 years, and then I have two children. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, so they keep me pretty busy.
All right. Thank you both. We're glad to have you. Now let's get started. So Cheryl, can you give us a brief overview of the analgesia and anesthesia in the intrapartum period, EBG, and the role and importance of proper birthing positions?
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. A team of very dedicated and committed individuals, A1 nurses, helped put this together, and it is termed the Evidence-Based Clinical Practice Guideline for Analgesia and Anesthesia in the Intrapartum Period. The purpose of this guideline is to provide guidance and clinical recommendations for practice for nurses caring for women during the intrapartum period, and helping to be able to assess, guide, and interpret the pharmacologic effects of a woman's choice for analgesia and anesthesia as she attempts to manage her pain during that labor course. The guideline addresses a lot of things. It focuses a lot on various different analgesics, everything from parenteral opiates like morphine and fentanyl, Stadol, Nubain, but it also addresses issues that could come up with remifentanil, nitrous oxide, and of course, regional analgesia. We promote the use of low concentration local anesthetics to help the woman maintain as much mobility as possible throughout the course of labor, because we do know that a woman's ability to move and change positions is very important to facilitating the progress of labor, and more importantly, to minimizing the risk of injury to her. So as long as a woman can move and change positions, and we are encouraging that movement and changing positions about every 15 minutes, the hope is that we will minimize the possibility of injury throughout the labor process to both mom and to the fetus. A1 has also worked on the nursing care for the second stage of labor, which addresses optimal birthing positions. And then to add to that, we have recently developed the A1 practice brief number 11, which is set to come out on October 19th. It will be a free download online, and it specifically addresses the lower extremity nerve injury during childbirth and how to prevent that.
Wonderful. All right, thank you. And Jennifer, can you give us a brief overview of lower extremity nerve injury and perhaps share your story with our listeners?
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to. I'll share my story first, and then I can kind of talk about different nerve injuries and go into detail a little bit more. So, as I said, I have a four-year-old and a two-year-old, and I actually experienced nerve damage during the birth of my second child, my daughter, 2 years ago. It'll be 2 years in about 3 weeks. So I had an emergency C-section with my first son. And so this is my first vaginal birth with my daughter. And I went into labor, very uncomplicated pregnancy and labor. I labored and pushed specifically for about 4 hours. And I was in that lithotomy position. And it was alternating between either my legs actually resting in the stirrups or having family or provider or staff hold up my legs. But the majority of that 4 hour time, my legs were in that lithotomy position with legs up. I also kind of used a technique off and on, taking a flat sheet and kind of rolling it up and almost using it like a tug of war with someone at the end of the bed to kind of doing that. That was just a little small portion of the 4 hours of pushing. But so after my daughter was born, she was born with no complications and, you know, everything seemed to go well with her birth. I did have an epidural. So I did have an epidural and they turned the epidural off, you know, right after she was born. And within an hour or two, my right leg started waking up and I was able to have feeling in the right leg, and my left leg was not. I was not having any feeling in my left leg. So after several hours went by, you know, as a nurse myself, I kind of was getting a little bit concerned that I had no feeling in my left leg. And, you know, as postpartum nurses do, they're encouraging you to get up and they want you to get up and go to the bathroom. So lots of nurses were trying to encourage me to do that. And I kept telling them, hey, I don't have any feeling in my left leg. So they kept reassuring me that it must be the epidural that was wearing off slowly. So several hours go by the end of that night. My daughter was born at 8 a.m. So by the evening, we're, you know, 12 hours or so, I still have no use of my left leg. So from about upper thigh to my ankle, I had zero feeling. It felt like someone had attached a dead limb to my body. So you can imagine my continued alarm that I was speaking up and nobody really could have an answer except for that it must be the epidural wearing off. So thankfully the next morning, so about 24 hours after she was born, we did consult anesthesia. They came by to check me out and he did an assessment and checked out what areas in my lower half that I could feel, what I couldn't feel. And very quickly he said, I believe this is femoral nerve damage. He specifically called it femoral nerve impingement. And so he just described it as a very badly bruised femoral nerve, especially after I had told him I had been in the position of pushing for 4 hours in that lithotomy position. And based off the area of my left leg that I couldn't feel, he was very confident it was that left femoral nerve that was damaged. So unfortunately, he told me that it would take about 2 weeks to heal before I would, you know, have normal feeling. But he said only 2 weeks. And so while I was in the hospital, I was obviously, you know, very scared as a new, well, not new mom, but just a mom of another baby. But also this, you know, I can't feel my left leg. And although the anesthesiologist had told me that and had kind of diagnosed it, there was really no official diagnosis from like a neurologist or my OB physicians. That was just kind of his opinion. Nobody offered to consult physical therapy or OT. None of the nurses had ever seen this before. So I actually myself asked to have a walker, which it took a little bit of work to get a walker to the L&D floor because that's not something that happens all that often. And so, or at least the staff that I was around had not seen that. And so I got a walker. I was able to ambulate only with that walker. Again, no feeling in that left leg except for basically my foot. So had to have help getting in and out of bed, on the toilet, just, you know, total care. Obviously could not hold my newborn daughter at all. So trying to breastfeed at night, had to wake my husband up to get her and bring her to me. So I discharged home 2 days later and had no really official diagnosis, no plan for treatment, no physical therapy, OT evaluation, or outpatient basis set up. So I went home really with zero resources and just the hope that it would heal within 2 weeks. So 2 weeks went by and I barely, you know, there was barely any feeling that returned to my left leg in that 2 week period, which became really terrifying. That the one person that had kind of diagnosed it had said 2 weeks and I had really no change in that 2 week period. So I did a lot of Googling, trying to figure out what this could be, you know, just really not having any answers. I came across a Facebook group that is specifically for moms with lower extremity damage from childbirth. There's about 1,700 members, and it actually represents about 38 different countries all over the world. So I got a lot of the beginning of my information from that group as far as what was going on, the fact that it was left femoral nerve damage, but it was much more severe than obviously the anesthesiologist had originally told me. So from that group, I realized I needed to get into physical therapy immediately, consult with a neurologist. And once I did that, he officially did diagnose it with that left femoral nerve damage. I did intensive 6 months of physical therapy, just regaining that feeling of the nerves, which can take a very long time. But then also not having the use of my left leg. Obviously, there was a lot of issues with my muscles in my left leg and just the strength there. And so I essentially had to relearn how to walk. Just, you know, as the weeks and months went on, as I began to have more feeling and more strength, I was able to do new things. But for those first several weeks that I was at home, I mean, I was a total care. I had to have someone at my bed at all times to be able to help me. It took several weeks before I could actually pick up my daughter safely. And walk with her, driving, cooking meals, doing all of those things, getting in and out of the shower. I had to have someone help me do that for weeks at the beginning. And so when I finally, I was able to go back to work around 5 months, I just was had to kind of, you know, take it easy. And even to this day, I'm only healed about 90% in that left leg. I still have some weakness in the left knee. I get a lot of muscle fatigue and nerve fatigue by the end of the day on the 12-hour shift that I work as a nurse. And so it's still residual, you know, the damage that's done in that left femoral nerve. Thankfully, I've been on, you know, go on to have a fairly normal life. I'm able to take care of my children, my family. I'm able to work. But it was a pretty devastating injury. And so when I went back to work as a registered nurse, I just felt this pull to do something with what had happened to me. And knowing that there just was not a lot of information out there, a lot of like clinical data and information that apparently, you know, just providers, at least the ones that I saw, this was not a common injury that they were aware of. And so that's when I really started getting into the academic world of this. I reached out to several educators and different people that are in labor and delivery and in the obstetrical world, obviously, because that's not my expertise as a nurse, but and really just delved into that to begin doing what we're doing. And so what Cheryl talked about, the practice brief update that's coming out next month, I worked on that with one of the colleagues that I have been working on all this with. And so, yeah, just to jump in really quickly, kind of give a brief overview of lower extremity nerve damage. So basically there's three types. You have the femoral and the peroneal and sciatic nerves that can be damaged. And in my case, it was the femoral, which is mainly in that stirrup position or even squatting. And then with some of your peroneal and sciatic, you can also have positioning for moms holding onto their own legs, whether it's in front of the knee or that posterior thigh. So with that, most of the women that we see that have had this nerve damage, it is with an epidural. Now, it can happen without, but most often it is with an epidural. And it's because they can't feel that those nerves are being compressed. So if you kind of imagine sitting on the toilet, you know, for 4 hours and never moving in that one position, if you got up, you would fall to the ground. You know, those nerves would be compressed that entire time. But thankfully, you can feel when your nerves, when your arm falls asleep, when your leg falls asleep, you feel that that nerve is being compressed. And so you shake it out, that kind of falling asleep feeling, you notice it. Well, the women, when they have an epidural, they can't feel that. And same thing is with when family or providers are holding up the legs. Sometimes they're pushing back in positions that are not normal for their legs to go, but the woman can't. She has no guarding. That muscle guarding has been taken away with epidural. And so she can't tell you that that's too far or that she feels like the nerve is being compressed. And so really the biggest thing is it's the position and the time. So as Cheryl mentioned, really the best practice recommendation at this point is moving positions every 15 to 20 minutes. And so if you're in that stirrup position or you're in that lithotomy position, at least bringing those legs down every 15 to 20 minutes or really in any of those positions where those nerves can be compressed, just moving is the key. Getting to move around for that every 15 to 20 minutes, giving those nerves a break. And I would say the majority of women that I've seen and that I've studied do at least come around to like a 75% healing. they at least get to that 75%. But we do have women that I know that have never fully recovered. There's one in the Facebook group that has become wheelchair bound. She was never able to really ever be able to walk. And so she's in a wheelchair. And so, you know, this is an injury that's devastating for women. I'm extremely grateful and thankful that I got back to somewhat of a normal life with having about 90% feeling in that left leg. But it was a pretty terrifying experience and just has been, and it's probably going to be a lifelong thing for me, that it's just something I have to be aware of that weakness because of that damaged nerve in my left leg. So really, if you hear me say one thing, it is about the positioning and the time. That's how you get the injury, is being in a certain position for too long and not moving. You know, I think in the obstetrical world, positioning of mom has often kind of been viewed as like baby and how to get the baby to move or progress labor. I think there's a little bit of an information gap. There has been of moving, making sure mom is moving to make sure she's not injured. And, you know, I'm obviously a registered nurse. So there's things that you just haven't seen in your career or things that are more rare. And from my experience in the last 2 years, this is something that it does happen, I think, a lot more often than we think it does, but it just isn't really out there yet. And I think in the last 6 months, like, we're making major headway with making sure that this is a very well-known thing so that providers can recognize it. Nurses can help prevent this injury from even occurring. But even if it does occur, knowing the signs and symptoms of how to help moms after it's occurred. So that's kind of how, that's my story and kind of how I got involved with all of this.
Thank you, Jennifer. And Cheryl, in addition to the positioning techniques that Jennifer just mentioned, which modes of anesthesia or analgesia do you find to be the most successful in conjunction with proper positioning and adjustments?
Well, I would reiterate some of the things that Jennifer said, that anytime that a woman chooses to use anesthesia or analgesia, whether it be parenteral opiates or regional blocks, that we dampen the woman's response to the pain sensation significantly enough that she may not always recognize when an area of her body is being overstretched. And to reiterate Jennifer's story, it is compression, stretch, and time that leads to injury. So minimizing the motor block of a regional anesthetic will help a woman to be able to position her legs as much on her own as possible. And then while there are many safe positions for delivery, optimally we want to not extend or flex the knee or the hip greater than 90 degrees. And anytime that we have a woman in one of those positions for labor, for pushing, or for delivery, we want to be cognizant to straighten the leg, bring it back midline, because when it is, when the hip and knee are flexed greater than 90 degrees, and especially if the knee is abducted from the midline, meaning rotated out, and we do see women put in frog leg positions, then that is a lot of compression and stretch on not just the femoral nerve, but the lateral femoral cutaneous nerve, as well as the peroneal nerve and the sciatic. So there's a lot of muscles and nerves that can be affected in that position. And ideally, we want to bring that back to midline. And knowing that by utilizing any type of analgesia or anesthesia, we impair the woman's ability to recognize that that stretch is a little bit too much or taking too long. So that would be the best thing. I would say that the best or most ideal position for labor is whatever is comfortable for the woman. We need to check in with her. We need to listen to what the patient is telling us about, this doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel comfortable, it's not optimal for me, and we need to change positions frequently. And then her choice for anesthesia and analgesia is certainly a personal choice, and the nurse needs to be aware of all of the options that are available to help guide that best choice and use during the intrapartum period. And then certainly in the follow-up period, again, listening to the patient, hearing what they have to say, and doing immediate and quick follow-up for assessment and intervention of any problems. We do promote the use of low dose local anesthetics so that we can optimize the woman's ability to maintain as much motor movement as possible.
Thank you. All right. Well, Jennifer and Cheryl, are there any additional tips you'd like to provide for our nurses on preventing lower extremity nerve injury?
Yeah, I think just Cheryl and I have both kind of given several things, but just to reiterate a few of those, I would say just, again, one thing that we identified, I think with my experience, I and a lot of my colleagues that I worked with, we just identified a lot of areas in my own personal experience that could have been done differently that would have prevented my nerve damage. And so then that was kind of a springboard into just studying this. And so a few tips from mine. My labor started at 10 in the evening, or that's when I got to the hospital, and I didn't deliver my daughter until 8 the next morning. So that was two different shifts that I was, you know, had taken care of by two different nurses. And I began pushing around 5 in the morning. And then she wasn't delivered until about 8:30. So that 5 o'clock period was obviously the night shift nurse. And then the day shift nurse came on for the last part of my pushing until my daughter was born. And so you had two different nurses that were taking care of me. And I assume that that is not something that's maybe not regularly talked about, of handing off to the next oncoming nurse, how obviously how long mom is pushing, but maybe the positioning that she's been in. Hey, how many times has she been in that position? How long has she been in that position? And so that's really something that nurses could do when they're handing off shift to shift, of saying, hey, mom has been in this specific position, you know, for this long, and she's been in that position several times in the last hour or two. And so I wonder if part of how my injury happened and kind of fell through the cracks is maybe those nurses didn't communicate with each other, that when the oncoming nurse came on, she didn't know I'd already been in that position for, you know, two to two and a half hours at that point when she came on. And so just kind of that gap in communication there. And then I would just say, again, if people listening here say one thing, just moving positions every 15 to 20 minutes. That 15 to 20 mark is so important to just make sure that your moms are getting those nerves are not compressed for longer than 15 to 20 minutes and just really moving them around. And again, as Cheryl said, you know, they may not know that that nerve is being compressed. So that falls on the nurse and the provider to make sure that they're keeping mom safe, even when she can't speak up for herself in that way. And this, you know, this happens with surgery patients as well, that are in positions for a very long time. And it's the same thing. You know, when you have a patient that's completely sedated and can't speak at all, you're going to be aware of things like that. But in this case, mom can talk and she's, you know, awake, but she just can't feel that those nerves are being compressed. So that's something that you have to think of as you're providing care for that patient. And then I would say just even educating family. And I think this one thing that could change maybe even in the use of analgesia and anesthetic in that setting for labor and delivery patients is maybe just making sure that they know that that is a risk. And I think that that is spoken of as a risk, but just really teaching everyone in the room of how to prevent it. You know, that's family, especially because I know that a lot of times dad is at the bedside or mom or mother-in-law and they're holding that leg and they're getting excited and they're pushing that leg back in a compromising position for mom. So even after that epidural is done, just, you know, the anesthesiologist really communicating, hey, this is something that could happen. And so anybody in the room just wants you to hear this, that we need to be careful. And if you notice that mom's been in that position for half an hour, you know, speak up and let's get her legs moved or let's kind of get her in a different position. And so kind of viewing it as a teamwork of everyone that's in that room of paying attention to making sure that mom is moving in a different position every 15 to 20 minutes.
Those are very good points that you make, Jennifer. And I would agree with that and reiterate that it is a team effort to protect the mom while she's in labor so that we don't accentuate or open the door for possibility of injury. And you're right, this femoral nerve injury, especially femoral nerve, lateral femoral cutaneous and peroneal nerve injury are common not just in labor and delivery, but in any surgery where a patient has to be put up in a lithotomy position because it's the flexion of the hip and the knee and possible compression of that nerve. And as you mentioned before, the holding up the legs, whether the leg is being supported in a stirrup or if it's being supported by a person, that pressure just from your fingertips behind the back of your knee or on the side of your knee is enough to compress a nerve and lead to some nerve ischemia. So it's certainly important to educate anyone who's in the room, who's assisting with the labor and pushing process, about the importance of repositioning those legs every 15 minutes and checking in with the mom frequently, whether she can feel anything or not, but checking in to make sure that how she's feeling and if she's feeling anything. And then being knowledgeable to bring those legs back to midline and neutral position every few minutes so that we can relax and give that nerve and the muscles in the lower extremity and in the pelvis a little bit of a break and a moment to recover. I would say that tips for helping nurses who are particularly taking care of women during the interpartum period. There are some good resources through A1. There's not only the evidence-based practice guidelines for analgesia and anesthesia in the interpartum period, which does address repositioning the patient every 15 minutes, but there's also the resource of the nursing care management of second stage labor, which was published by A1, and of course, our most recent practice brief that will be released on October 19th, the lower extremity nerve injury during childbirth. But communication, with all of that information that is out there, communication is really what's most essential. Communicating with the patient, as Jennifer referenced, communication among the nurses, especially at change of shift when a patient has been laboring for a long time. And then educating, like she said, everyone in the room, because we are all part of a team to produce the best outcome in labor and delivery, and we want our moms to be healthy and safe.
Thank you, Cheryl. And Jennifer, thank you. We're happy that you're recovering and feeling much better.
Thank you.
And thank you for bringing all this information to light, Jennifer. That's your strength is definitely something to be admired, and I appreciate you for telling your story.
So thank you, guys. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, Cheryl and Jennifer, I thank you again for all of your efforts and dedication to caring for mothers and babies and for bringing awareness to the issue of lower extremity nerve injury during childbirth. We appreciate all that you do. And to all of our listeners, please note that this information is not intended to replace a consultation with your provider. You may also visit our website at a1.org for additional resources. As always, if you're having an emergency, please dial 911. Until we meet again, remember that we are all stronger together. This has been Sophia Navard for A1 Insights.